This is Friday on the Other Side on Mind Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Fridays, we take a look at experiences and concepts that you might not think have a mental health component, but in fact, they do. I'm very pleased to introduce to you David S. Duplay. Now, David is described as a business and technology strategist for the healthcare industry with a heritage in healthcare marketing, communications, and technology. That is more than a mouthful, so let's find out from Dave what this all means. Dave Duplay, welcome to Mind Talk.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you and your listeners.
Now, I got to tell you, Dave, if we put all of this description on your business card would sort of be like an 8.5 by 11.
Yeah, you're right. It's a mouthful, right?
What does the business and technology strategist for the healthcare industry, what does that mean?
Well, I guess when you boil it all down, I've spent my entire career, more than 20 years in healthcare, and I've always looked for ways to utilize technology to facilitate a process or to leverage information, disseminate information in a more effective and efficient way, and technology allows us to do that.
It's interesting to me as I listen to what you are describing, because there certainly was a time when the idea of technology connected to patient care was not only not on the table, but if it was on the table, it was completely horrifying, and it was a way to disconnect from your clients, not a way to connect with your clients. But nowadays, it's actually very, very different.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And if you think about it, the pendulum has just totally swung the opposite direction, and I think for the better. In fact, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about here. You know, I've had the opportunity in my career a number of years ago to run a company called the Physician Desk Reference. And for those listeners who don't know what that is, it's a big, very, very large book that sat in the back in the doctor's office, and it contained all the FDA-approved medications that were on the market. And if you think back, you know, you'd be in your exam with your doctor, and he would diagnose you, and then it would come time for that physician to write a prescription. And, you know, a few times, you know, the doc would have his go-to medications. You know, if you were diagnosed with sinusitis or had some little infection, you know, he would have or she would have the go-to medications that they would prescribe, but sometimes they weren't quite sure. So they'd go in the back and they'd look in the PDR and they'd look up, you know, all the approved products, the approved prescriptions, and the doctor would choose one and come and give you a script. And nowadays, you know, that big book, which was so heavy and so cumbersome, sits in the palm of their hand on an iPhone. And it's really amazing. And it's just so much more efficient when that doctor can sit there and look it up. And even with technology, they can connect to your insurance plan to make sure that that product that he is going to write, that prescription, is covered under your prescription benefit plan for your insurance. So, you know, you think about, you know, it prior to technology, you'd get that prescription, you'd go to the pharmacy, and many times the pharmacist would say, you know, Dave, I'm sorry, but this product isn't covered under your plan. And what would happen? They'd have to call back to the doctor's office, and the doctor would have to call in another prescription that was under your plan. With technology, all of that process is just streamlined and eliminated.
So, in fact, what could conceivably take at least a week, certainly several days, could take several days in order for you to actually get to your medication, now can happen in moments. It can happen within 5 minutes.
Absolutely. And, you know, Doc, you know, try to get a hold of your physician during the business hours. You know, the docs in seeing patients, and so they can't just drop what they're doing and then go and look up another product for you. So you're right, it does take time, and in fact, it could take up to a week before you get your medication.
Absolutely. And then, you know, is it the medication your insurance covers? It could be a nightmare. So at least this part of the nightmare is eliminated in a really wonderful and patient-centered way.
Yep, absolutely.
Dave, you, in addition to working in the healthcare field, you have actually had your own personal experiences with health matters within your family. Can you talk about those?
Absolutely. And, you know, those health issues that were challenging my family actually led me to start the company that I now have. You know, a few years ago, my sister-in-law was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer in her early 30s. And, you know, she lives in North Carolina. She went through the Duke medical system and got unbelievable medical care. She had a disconnect in the support group that she was going to because she was 20-some years younger than other women in the group. So while she's getting great medical care from Duke, she's going off to this support group once a week, and she's trying to find answers to some basic questions like, how do I go home and tell my 4- and 6-year-old girls that I have breast cancer, that I'm going to lose my hair, that I'm going to lose my breasts, that the house isn't going to be normal for a period of time without these 2 girls, you know, really freaking out? And she wasn't getting those answers because the other women in the group had children who were in their 20s and 30s, so they did not have to have that type of conversation with 2 young girls.
Right.
So there was a big disconnect there. And that led me, with my technology background, to look for a solution where we could use technology which would allow her to connect to other women just like her anywhere in the world to share stories of inspiration, motivation, and support to help them through the journey.
You also had an experience within your family when your mom was diagnosed. What was that like for you?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, my mother is an Alzheimer's patient, and my father is her caregiver, and she's still at home. And Alzheimer's is just a hideous disease. You know, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is she has Alzheimer's. The good news is she's very, very healthy other than the Alzheimer's. The bad news, again, is she could live a very long time with Alzheimer's. So, you know, you never expect this to happen to your parents or to a loved one, and then all of a sudden you get the diagnosis, and Alzheimer's, there's no cure. So, you know, we're just losing her one day at a time.
The idea that you're just kind of watching, particularly a parent, but you're watching someone essentially die. They're physically healthy, emotionally, psychologically having real challenges. Were you able to access support groups for yourself?
Absolutely. You know, I turned to my own company, Healthy0360, which is an online community, and I found support like that. You know, with my busy schedule and with the obligations of caregiving for my family, it is, and especially with something like Alzheimer's, where, you know, we just can't leave mom alone, where it's caregiving is 7 days a week, 24 hours a day for an Alzheimer's patient. So you have to find creative ways and creative outlets to find support and, you know, recharge your batteries.
So, in fact, being able to access support on demand whenever you need it is another, I think, critical benefit of the program that you are now running.
Absolutely. You know, and most of the time, it's in the, you know, the wee hours of the night when, you know, everything settles down, mom's sleeping, kids are in bed. It's that then is the opportunity where you can go on and, you know, you have access to the support 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So whenever you can, you know, have a few minutes, log on, share a story, hear a story, connect with somebody, talk about how they're caregiving and how you're caregiving. And, you know, you learn little things. What works for you may very well work for me, but if I didn't connect with you online, I would never know that little tip that, you know, so effectively works for you.
And, you know, it sounds like in a lot of ways it can be such a lifesaver. Certainly whether you're going through your own health issue or the health issue of a loved one, a lot of times that can feel very lonely. And you can feel like no one else understands.
Well, you're so right. You know, because caregiving, there's no training. You know, you find yourself thrust into this role. And so there's no class you could take. There's nothing that prepares you because, you know, if you've seen one patient or you've seen 100 patients, you've seen one patient. Every patient is different. Every caregiving scenario is different. And so, you know, you really have to look at the situation and try to find somebody that's going through the journey, a very similar journey with you. And that's where the power of this tool really lies.
And I think tool is exactly what it is. And I think more and more people are coming to that perspective, but certainly more and more people could stand to get there as well. There are so many apps on the market. How does one determine the quality of one app over another? Is there a way? Is there a clearinghouse? How do you know that you're in the right place with the right folks?
Yeah, that is a very, very good question because, let's face it, the Internet can be a very scary place. So, you know, do your homework. It's like anything else. It's like shopping for a car or a new appliance. You know, you want to go on and you want to find people who are using it. You want to read a lot of reviews. You want to understand the utility of the tool and how to use it. Our tool is a desktop application combined with a mobile app. So, you know, you could be sitting at home and you could have your laptop out and connect. Or if you're on the go and you need a little inspiration while you're sitting in the waiting room of the doctor's office, you can log on to the app and get your content, your information, and support that way as well. But read reviews, read what people are saying about it. And it's all about how you work and how you function as well. All these apps and applications, you know, function in a little bit of a different way. And, you know, I always like to say it's an and, not an or. It's not this app or that app. You know, I personally have two or three health apps on my phone, which I use on a very regular basis. My company's app, Healthio 360, is just one of three or four that I use on a daily basis.
And, you know, the idea that one could be in a waiting room and actually turn to a app, or Healthio 360 certainly being one of them, that's actually a thought that I think is a comfort for folks, because there's so many times when you could be sitting in a waiting room, whether you're the one who's waiting for care or you're with someone who's waiting for care, and those waiting room experiences can be challenging. How about we call it that? in and of themselves. And to just know that you could actually plug into an app that is healthy and comforting and supportive, I don't know. That seems like that could be a win-win if you had no other market but just folks sitting in a waiting room.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, especially we have a very large number of cancer patients and their caregivers that use our app. And, you know, especially when a patient or a caregiver is in the chemo chair and they're in there for a significant period of time, they can log on to the app, they can read health news and see what's going on in the world of health. They could look for a nutritious recipe. You know, there's a lot of things that they can do to occupy that time of sitting there waiting as they're, you know, in the doctor's office.
The numbers that I'm hearing about folks who are actually involved in caregiving are tremendous, and there's almost no way to really, I would say, quantify the numbers, because it's not just the one person who's dealing with the effects of some of a loved one's health. It might be that person, might be that person's entire family, could be friends. I mean, there's so many people who extend beyond the one person caring for the one person. And one of the issues that often comes up for caregivers is their own experience of depression.
Oh, you're so right. And you really hit the nail on the head. It is not a one-to-one ratio. It's a one-to-many. And, you know, you touched on the large number of caregivers. You know, there are over 34 million unpaid caregivers who provide care to somebody age 18 or older who's ill or have a disability. So you think about those numbers, and I got to tell you, Doc, those numbers are growing. You know, the population's getting old. The baby boomers, right, are getting older. And now we have this whole new thing called the sandwich generation, right? So you look at my situation, and I have elderly parents on one side, and I have young children on the other side, and I'm sandwiched in between. Now I have to help provide care for my mother and father. And, of course, you can't neglect the kids, right? You've got to take care of them as well. So, you know, caregiver burnout is a significant issue. It's mental burnout. It's physical burnout. It's emotional burnout. It's psychological burnout. It's spiritual burnout. And you really have to be careful. And you have to watch for the signs of that and take action early rather than later.
The idea that 34 million people, and the numbers are growing, are engaged in caregiving, I don't know, that seems pretty astounding.
Isn't that a big number? You know, it is huge, and they're just growing and growing. And like I say, you know, there's no training. You know, when you go to the doctor and you're there and you hear those words, you have cancer or you have Alzheimer's or you have Parkinson's, and all of a sudden, you know, your mind goes numb, and now what do I do, right? And so you're cast into this role of caregiving, and, you know, and this is where I think connecting with other caregivers who are going through the journey, it's so important. Because you can read all the literature and you could go talk to physicians about it, but there's nothing like talking to somebody who's going through the exact same thing. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter to me if I'm sitting in New York and they're sitting in LA or Dallas or Miami. If that person's just like me, and they're going through the exact journey, we can learn from each other, we can support each other, and we can inspire each other.
And just the fact that you're not going through it alone is so very critical. And I would suggest that so many people don't acknowledge the value of knowing there's another person on the planet who's going through not exactly your experience, but enough like your experience that you really can feel like there's a partner somewhere, that you're not alone on the planet as you're dealing with this issue. And there are so many issues that come up for caregivers that very often they don't feel a space to talk about.
Yeah, and, you know, I have to tell you, it is a sad thing to say, but it's true. In some cases, there is great stigma that's attached to some illnesses, right?
True.
Mental illness is one that comes to the top of mind. And so sometimes when you are caregiving for somebody who has a mental illness, it can be embarrassing because of that stigma. And you don't want to reach out to your friends. You know, you're trying to keep it quiet. And in fact, I remember when I was a young boy and somebody in the family had cancer, well, all the adults would gather in the back room, and they wouldn't say the word cancer. You know, it was C. You know,
right.
They've been diagnosed, they've got C. You know, they wouldn't say the word. And, you know, fortunately, I think we've come a long way in talking about cancer and the dialogue. You know, we've taken it from the back room to the front room, and we have to treat every condition, whether it's mental illness, whether it's HIV, whether it's cancer, whatever it is. The conversation has to come, get out of the back room and into the front room, and we have to recognize it, and we have to talk about it, because that's the way we're going to get support.
Absolutely. Dave, we're going to take a break, and we will continue on the other side. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of those signs of caregiver burnout that a lot of times people aren't aware that that's what's going on, but in fact it is. Folks,
absolutely.
You're listening to Mind Talk. I'm having a conversation with David Duplay, who is with Healthio 360, an online caring community. We'll be right back. Dave, let's talk about caregiver burnout. What does that look like? How can one tell that they may be experiencing burnout?
Yeah, and you know, this is a real hard thing to detect because many times you don't realize that you're going through the burnout until you've hit the wall.
It's true.
And, you know, I've read, and I have to tell you, caregiving can be a very, very rewarding experience. But it also can be emotionally and physically challenging. And, you know, I read some numbers the other day that caregivers report having difficulty finding time for themselves 35% of the time.
I believe it.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah,
And it's just so stressful. And the numbers of these folks, you know, we talked earlier, there's over 34 million, and many are just really stressed. And, you know, and caregiving is a full-time job. And then, you know, just navigating through life, work, family responsibilities, and all the other things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, then you put over top of all of that all the pressures and stress of just life, caregiving, and you really have to be careful. You know, so there's some things, there's some tips that I think are very, very important for caregivers to know. If you'd like to kind of run through those, we can talk about each one of them, and I'll give you my viewpoint on it.
Perfect.
So, you know, when I talk to caregivers, and they ask me, you know, and especially when I meet with somebody who is new at caregiving, I always tell them the first and foremost, the most important thing is to take care of your own health. And I have to tell you, I have firsthand experience in this because, you know, as I said, my mother is an Alzheimer's patient, and my father is the caregiver, and my mother still, for the time being, lives at home. And my father he still loves golf, but he used to play 4 to 5 times a week at this little public course in his town. And he and his buddies would go out, and they'd always walk. They would never take a cart. They enjoyed the golf. They enjoyed the camaraderie. And you walk 18 holes 4 or 5 times a week, you get to be in pretty good shape, and you're carrying a golf bag or pulling it on a little pull cart. You get to be in pretty good shape. Well, now, you know, my father cannot leave mom alone. And so his golf playing days have pretty much come to an end. And I can see the weight that he's gaining. And, you know, and I say to him all the time, and I say this to everyone, you got to take care of yourself, because if you don't, how can you take care of somebody else? So that's tip number one. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, you're absolutely right. And so many times there's so much guilt connected with taking care of yourself. And so many times the idea is, I'm not the one who's sick. I'm not the one who needs care. And if you don't watch out, you are going to be the one who's ill, and you are going to be the one who needs care. So it's not a matter so much of being selfish, which, again, is how a lot of people see it. It is, as you said, it's a matter of being able to be healthy for the entire circle, if you will.
Absolutely, yeah. Because, you know, especially if you're in the sandwich generation and you're caregiving for a parent, you know, if you get sick, you're not only going to not be able to provide good quality care for the parent who's sick, but then you've got the children on the other end that are going to suffer as well. So first and foremost, pay attention to your own health. It is the most important thing. The other piece of advice I give is, don't be afraid to ask for help. You know, you have to raise your hand. You have to let people know what you're going through. And we talked about it earlier. The conversation can't be in the back room. You have to let people know, and you can't be afraid to ask for help. Because and once you realize that and you do begin to ask for help, you're going to be surprised at the number of people that will help and contribute and chip in some way. Whether it's nothing more than spending time with the person you're caring for so that you can have a half hour to take a walk around the block, clear your mind, recharge your batteries, but you cannot be afraid to raise the hand and say, I need help.
One of the things that I would suggest is that as you make the decision to engage in caregiving, that's the moment when you also make the decision about who's going to be part of that caregiving team, not when you're sort of down the road and you're ready to pull out your hair and the hair of everybody around you. That's a critical part of it. Okay, I'm going to take care of mom. Mom's got Alzheimer's. What am I going to put in place so that I have some breaks? That's got to be part of that early, in my view, early conversation and early and consistent planning.
You're so right. And the key word that you just said is team. It's a team, right? And you have to think about it like that. And, you know, and as a team, there's some things that you need to really pay attention to. I always tell people, if you're not technology savvy, get a 3-ring binder and keep good notes. Take every day, you can build a little log in your 3-ring binder, and every day when my dad gives my mom medication, he puts a little check. She took her, you know, she received her medication this morning. That way, if my sister happens to come over and my dad takes off for a little respite, or a little recharge of his batteries, my sister can open that up and say, okay, yep, mom's got her medication today. So as part of that team, use some tools. There are wonderful mobile apps that you can download. They're free. And you and your care team can share that app and share information, just as I'm suggesting about tracking the medication and things of that nature. You know, yep, mom ate lunch today. She's eaten, she's got her medication. Put that in the app, put that in your 3-ring binder, because your care team needs to know about that.
And in fact, as I was going through your site, there is actually an app that you can connect to through your site where you can do precisely that, make note of the medications, what's taken and when and how much.
Absolutely. We have on our site, we have links to those apps. They're free. Download them. Give them a try. If they work for you, great. You know, if technology is not your thing, again, keep a log. The other thing about a log is, And you know, you go to the doctor, and especially if you have a chronic illness, and the doctor says, well, how are you getting along? And you say, and really you kind of think back and you say, well, you know, mom or dad's doing okay. But if you don't have a log, you're really thinking back to the last couple days, right? But if you have a log, it could be a month between doctor's visits.
It's true.
And you could say, you know what, on Monday of 2 weeks ago, Mom had a really bad day, and on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday she had a bad day, and Saturday was a good day. So, you know, you've got to keep that log as well, because you want to paint the most accurate picture for the medical team that's caring for your loved one. So important.
Absolutely. You know, as we're talking, I'm reminded of a conversation I had with someone who was taking care of a parent and was clearly burned out, and yet had other family members in her ear telling her how much she wasn't doing. And
oh,
so,
boy.
Yeah, that's all she needed. So I bring that up because that does happen. It does happen where, you know, there could be 10 people in the family, and it's the same one who always steps up to the plate. And I would just add to that, not only do those things happen, and they happen often in any number of circumstances, but it's important to surround yourself with people who aren't doing that. Just because somebody is a family member doesn't mean they have to be in your circle of support for you.
That's exactly right, you know. You know, I have to tell you that, you know, when this happens, it's a real shame. And for any listener out there that knows of a caregiver, go up, give them a hug, tell them you appreciate what they're doing, because the caregivers are really the true unsung heroes in the healthcare equation. And, you know, when you're caregiving, what you need is positivity. You don't need the negativity. And if you experience that, you know, don't hang out with those people. You know, there's no easy way to say it, but
it's
you
true.
you don't need that.
You don't need that. It's harmful, and it takes away from your ability to care for you and to care for yourself. And we get that it's heartbreaking, but I think another thing about your app is that if you're in that kind of family, where, you know, they're sort of what have you done for so-and-so lately kind of folks, there are other people who really get it, who really understand, who've been there, who are there, and those are the people you can connect to. And as you said, they could be across the country, but they've still got an ability to connect with you and support you in a way that the naysayers just aren't useful.
Yeah, exactly right. Yep, you're so right. You know, there are a couple other things that I'll mention.
Yes.
You know, when I talk to caregivers, and so remember, number one was take care of your health. Number two is don't be afraid to ask for help. The third is don't forget about the others. And what I mean by that is caregiving is all consuming. And I have seen caregivers who are so busy caring for Mom and Dad that they sometimes, unfortunately, forget about the kids.
Right.
They forget about their spouse. They forget about their significant other or their friends. You know, you have to pick your head up, as tough as it is. Sometimes you feel guilty doing it, but you can't forget about the others, because you don't want to leave them behind either. You don't want your children feeling neglected because you're spending, you know, 7 days a week taking care of Mom or Dad. So you have to be careful. You have to recognize that. You know, go out of your way. You know, I always say, you know, if it's caregiving for you is that consuming, take whatever it is, put it in the calendar. Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock, from 7 to 8, that's our time together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And schedule that in and treat it as a, just as you would a doctor's appointment. Schedule those kids, schedule, you know, go on date night or movie night with your significant other. But you got to get away, and you can't forget about those other people, because, you know, they will feel neglected. And I've talked to several family members, especially men actually, who have said, you know, my wife is the doctor mom of the family, and she is so busy taking care of her parents or my parents or what have you, that I'm feeling lonely, I'm feeling neglected. You know, that relationship is suffering. So pay attention to that. You know, And for the men out there, if it's the doctor, mom of the family, you know, let's us guys roll up our sleeves and help out. Help doctor mom out, because, again, caregiving is so demanding. There's no training. And like we spoke earlier, the T word, team, it's a team.
The other thing, too, is that caregiving is such a consuming, as you said, complicated experience, that very often caregivers who find themselves being angry at the person who's sick, being angry at themselves for being angry at the person who's sick, being frightened, being, you know, any number of things, these are all really common reactions. And the last thing folks need to do is to start to blame themselves for how they're feeling.
You know, Doc, you're so right. And I have to tell you, you know, I'm guilty of that a little bit myself. I have to watch, because, you know, if you've been around an Alzheimer's patient, and they keep asking the same thing over and over, you know, I vividly remember a couple of years ago, my folks flew in for the holidays to see me, and I picked them up at the airport, and we got in the car, and my mom had lost a button on her jacket. And I have to tell you, between the airport and home, she must have asked where that button was 1,000 times. Well, after about the 100th time, I was getting a little tired of hearing about this button. And she was so focused on it and kept asking about it and asking. So the next day, we get up and she's on the button again. Well, I take her down to the store and I buy her a new coat with no buttons, a zipper. And I figure, I'm going to solve this problem. And I went home and I said, Dad, we're not going to hear about the button anymore. I bought Mom a new jacket. It's got a zipper on it. Doesn't it look nice? And my dad kind of looked at me, and it was an aha moment for me. And he said, Dave, you don't get it. The button is just one of many. She's going to be on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And like clockwork, he was true to form. You know, dads are always right. You know, your parents still have a lot of wisdom. She was on to the next thing. And I'm like, oh, my. So, Dad, look, you must be a saint, because I don't know how you do it. I honestly don't know how you do it. And you do find yourself getting frustrated. It's a tough thing, but it's a very, very real thing. And you have to recognize it. And, you know, you have to figure out your own method to cope with it, you know. But there are ways. And simply talking to somebody else who's going through the same thing and is experiencing those same feelings, it helps me tremendously.
You know, the other thing that I would add is, if you're caring for someone who, let's say, has had a head injury and is undiagnosed as having a head injury or newly diagnosed. So they could be dealing with a lot of the memory issues, for example, in the same way. And if you don't have a label for what's going on, it can send you up a wall. And even as you said, if you do have a label, in your case, Mom had Alzheimer's, again, it can still send you up a wall. Doesn't make you a bad person because you're getting frustrated. It makes you a human person.
You're 100% right. And I'll give you a little example that comes to mind right away when you bring this up. I know several people in my community, in my online community at Healthio 360, and they suffer from fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of medical professionals don't recognize that as a real disease, a real condition.
Right.
Some will say, well, it's a mental thing. But I will tell you, if you ever sit down and talk to a person, the pain that they experience is real pain, and their inability to function or get out of bed, it's real. It is real. And so, you know, you're right, whether you go undiagnosed or misdiagnosed, but even, you know, even though the diagnosis could be the worst diagnosis ever, at least when it's diagnosed and you have a label, you can begin to deal with it.
That is very true. That is, I would suggest, one of the useful things about labels. There's so much going back and forth these days about the value of a label, but you know, there certainly is some value. Dave, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue with our conversation, and I want to learn more about virtual social therapy. We'll be right back. What is VST, virtual social therapy?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, when people come to Healthio 360, they come looking for inspiration, motivation, and support. And we call that, we've kind of trademarked the term virtual social therapy. That's what they receive when they come to Healthio 360. And so if you begin to uncouple the words, right, and let's take the first one, virtual. Well, when you come to Healthio 360, you're not going to a physical location. You're not going to a local church or synagogue for support or, you know, a facility, a brick-and-mortar facility. You're going online. And so you're virtual. You're leveraging technology and you're leveraging the internet to connect with others in a virtual capacity. So that's the first word, virtual. Social is because what we don't provide is we don't provide medical advice. We're not doctors, we're not clinicians, so we don't provide medical advice. So it's you come virtually to the platform for social engagement, right? It's Doc, I see you. You're a caregiver for your mother. I'm a caregiver for my mother. We can share our stories. I can ask you, you know, how are you dealing with this situation? It's a social interaction between you and I, or between us and many other people that are chiming in and giving us advice and kind of communicating to us and sharing their stories. So it's a social network, so it's virtual, it's social, and we know by many, many studies that it is so therapeutic to share your story. And I'll give you an example. Before I started the company, I mentioned to you that my sister-in-law, stage 4 breast cancer, early 30s, having a difficult time connecting in the physical support group. She, you know, you go to Healthio 360, you join the community to connect virtually. So, again, she, you know, it doesn't matter to her whether she's in North Carolina and the woman that she's connecting with is in L.A., if they're about the same age, if their children are about the same age, if they're going through the same journey, you can connect with each other. So it's very, very therapeutic. But when I came home from listening to her and visiting her and her telling me about the challenges that she was having in the physical support group, before I launched in head first to start the company, I said, well, if a 30-something-year-old woman with breast cancer is experiencing this disconnect, what about people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and epilepsy and autism? So I spent about 2 months every night here in New York City going to a support group. And I would walk in, and I would sit, and I would listen to stories of people. And the first two or three, which I call my teary-eyed version of my journey, because I have to tell you, Doc, when you sit there and people stand up and share their story, it is really emotional. And this gentleman, I'm in a lung cancer support group one night, and this man stands up and he says, I've been given 4 months to live. And he goes on and he shares his story. And he talks about how he sees the world differently now. And, you know, he used to be so busy. and he'd walk by a bed of flowers and never recognize, never even look twice at it. And he said, now I stop and I see beauty in those flowers like I've never seen before. And after the meeting, I stuck around and I said to him, I said, boy, I tell you, if I were diagnosed and I were given 4 months to live, I'm not sure that I would be here doing this. I would be probably checking things off my bucket list as fast as I possibly could in the 4 months I had left. And he looked at me and he said, you know, but he said, if I can share my story and it helps just one person live tomorrow better, he said, I feel like I've done my job.
Wow, and that's extraordinary.
The light totally goes off. You stop dead in your tracks. What do you say to that, right? But he's so right. And so the therapeutic nature of sharing your story for this man in that group and many people online that come to Healthio is tremendous. I get so many emails and phone calls from people around the country thanking me for building this platform that allows them to communicate and share their story. And to some degree, they feel like they're leaving a legacy behind.
And, you know, as I said, I went through Healthy 3.0, and there's so many different options that are very much a part of, in my view, support and healing. Go through some of the options that are available in Healthy 3.0.
Yep. So you come to Healthio 360, and when we first launched it, we built it so you could share your story by video. And if you nowadays, I mean, people walk around with smartphones and they have just unbelievable video cameras on them. And so people are sharing their story, you know, capturing it by video, going to their charity walks or events and making a video and sharing it with the community. But we really launched with that in mind. Healthio comes from taking the words health and video and pulling those together. You get Healthio.
I was going to ask 360, you about that.
Yeah, right? Clever. The 360 comes into play because it's not only the patient that comes and shares their story, it's the caregiver, it's family members of the patient, it's friends of the patient. So we get like this 360-degree view of what's going on in that patient's life. And that's where the 360 comes into play. So we started the company allowing people to share their story. And then we said we needed more for them to do. So we began streaming health news into the site. So now you can come and you can read your health news. You can find out what's going on in the healthcare world, what new developments are happening, what new exercise programs are out there, what nutritional, and diet nutrition information is out there. So we stream every day, articles that we get into Healthio so people can have their news. Then we said, let's do a live show. So we launched something called H360 Live. So every Tuesday, my colleague Cortland and I, we do a live broadcast on our website. It's a 30-minute every Tuesday from 1 to 1:30. You can log into our site or you can go to live stream their site and watch us. And we talk about important health topics. And we have survivors on. We have patients on. We have caregivers on. Every week we always have a guest. We recently had David Osmond from the Osmond family. He has epilepsy. And he came and shared his story with us.
That's wonderful.
So, we really want to build awareness of health issues again, so people feel like they're not alone.
And one of the things I would suggest is that in addition to helping people realize that they're not alone, it takes away perhaps some of the fear of what this diagnosis actually means. What am I as a caregiver going to actually do? What am I as the person with this diagnosis? What does that mean for my life? Kind of takes away some of that.
It really does, yeah. When you can see somebody, and that's why we really wanted to build a video platform. you can go online and read blogs, but when you see somebody's video and you see in their face what they're going through and they're genuine and it's real, you know, our tagline is real people, real stories, real life, and that's what you get. You know, it's the real deal. We don't censor anything before it goes up. It's a true social media experience. Now, we do have a team of people that watch everything and read everything when people post, you know, to make sure that they're complying with our terms and conditions. And those are really, our terms and conditions are really how we expect you to behave mm-hmm. when you're in the community, and how we expect you to treat other people in the community. And, you know, knock on wood, we have not had any incidents. You know, people come and, as you mentioned, you know, you called us a caring community, and we very much care. You know, everyone that works at the company has their own personal story about their journey, whether they're a patient or a caregiver or a family member of a patient. Everyone that works here has a story, and that, I think that's really what makes our team special is, you know, we're not just doing it, but we're living it.
Are there any illnesses or experiences that you would say you don't cover? I mean, we've been talking about psychiatric issues, and we've certainly been talking about physical issues. Do you cover, for example, learning disabilities or those kinds of things?
We do, and we also cover, you know, we had a wonderful show on H360 Live. We had a lady come in, and she has a disability, and she, you know, uses a walker. And our whole show was about, and she travels all over the world. Her passion is travel, and she does not let her disability limit her in any way, shape, or form. But she's very smart when she travels, right? She needs a special room, and she goes through the airport in certain ways. And we had her on the show because, you know, there are other people that could really learn the tips and tricks and suggestions that she uses when she travels all over the world to help make their journey and their travel experience a little better.
And, you know, the kind of thing that from the outside looking in, you're not necessarily going to think about. I mean, so often when folks are confronted with a diagnosis, they think about the diagnosis only. And that's kind of, and they might lose sight of the people who are involved. So the idea that you can have a disability and you still eat food every day and you still have a favorite restaurant and, you know, you still want to travel, that often gets lost, certainly in the initial reaction to any number of diagnostic labels.
It really does. And when you hear, you know, her name is Grace Marie, and when you hear her story and she talks about how passionate she is about travel and the things she does, she's not gonna, you know, she's a woman to be reckoned with. I gotta tell you, I admire her a great deal because she lets nothing get in her way. And, you know, after the show, we had so many emails from people saying, thank you so much. And just, you know, you wouldn't believe, just even some of the little basic things, like if you're traveling, never check your medication. Always carry it on, because you never know when that plane is going to be delayed or the flight's going to be canceled or you're going to run into a weather issue, right? We don't think about that. It's, and, you know, and then you hear her say it and say, you know, she says, you never want to check your medication. Always carry it on. Always have it on your person with you, because when you travel, you never know where the experience is going to lead you. So be ready for that.
And it's not like luggage ever gets lost or sent to the wrong location.
No, right.
That never
right.
happens.
That never happens, right?
The idea also of recognizing what you need in order to get through your day. Again, for folks who are dealing with a disability of any kind, there's often a lot of embarrassment, if you will, about expressing their needs for what they need or want to get through their day. And certainly with having her on and with the way you describe her, she makes it very clear, look, this is me, this is my life, this is what I need, and period. Not,
yep.
I'm sorry. Not, would you mind, not, oh, I'm embarrassed, but this is my deal.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, so many times you can choose to not be like that and say, well, you know, gosh, woe is me, and you know what, I'm going to just lock myself in my room, and that's, you know, and I'll just be by myself. You know, always have a positive outlook, and that's what I admire about her so much. And I have to tell you, you know, her mobility issues are really challenging, but that's not going to stop her. You know, she keeps, every time I see her, smile on her face, a big hug from her, you know, and she just has this positive outlook that's going to get her through the day. And there are so many studies about patients who express a positive outlook versus patients who express a negative outlook. And those patients that have a positive outlook, you know, it's been demonstrated, and there's many, many studies, that if you look at the clinical outcomes, they're better in the people who have a positive outlook than those that have a very negative outlook.
It completely makes sense. What about situations where one might be providing care and other people, family, friends, whomever, are saying, you really shouldn't have them in your home. You should put them in a facility. How do you navigate that kind of advice, often unwanted?
Yeah. Doc, that's something that I am personally dealing with as we speak. You know, mom is not going to be able to stay in the home much longer. She is going to require professional care.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, having these discussions with my father is a very difficult thing. I mean, my dad's generation, he worked at one company his entire career.
Yeah.
You know, when I got out of school, I mean, in the first 10 years, I probably had 8 jobs. My dad used to say, you change jobs more than you change your underwear. And, you know, he had one company, and he's been married forever. And having the discussion with him about, let's find the right place where mom's going to be comfortable. She's going to get the quality of care and medical assistance that she's going to need, and you're going to be able to visit as much as you want, right? That is a tough conversation for a child to have with their parent.
Yeah.
About the parent spouse.
It's true.
So I wish I had a silver bullet for you here, you know, a recipe on how exactly to discuss it and have that conversation, but gosh, it's every family is different. There's so many family dynamics, and you know, it's a tough one. It really is. And you know, if any of your listeners are out there and they want to, you know, discuss it personally and talk about their challenges, you know, to email me, and I'm happy to connect with them and share, you know, how I'm approaching it in a level of detail that I think might help them. And it's all about, right, it's all about that virtual social therapy, and this is the 360, right? This is, I'm the family member. I'm not the caregiver. That's my father's role. I'm a family member, but I need to talk to other folks who are in that family member role who are going through the same thing.
Absolutely. Dave, spell for us the website address.
Yes, it's HealthyO360. It's spelled HEALTH, health, EO, the number 3, the number 6, the number 0.com, HealthyO360.com. And my email address is Dave D at HealthyO360.com. For anybody that, if you go to the site and you don't find exactly what you're looking for, email me, and I promise you I will try my best to point you in a direction where we can find you the resources that will help you.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for that, Dave. Thank you for the work that you're doing, and certainly thank you for the time you've spent with us today.
Well, Doc, thanks for having me on. And again, if you know a caregiver out there, go up, give them a big hug, and tell them how much you appreciate them.
excellent advice. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications and is available to you on demand at mindtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. You can also download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes Store. Folks, if you'd like to be in touch with me directly, that email is PAMELA, Pamela, at mindtalk.org. And again, that's mindtalk.org. And folks, remember too, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.